Let go. Let go of things you can't change. Let go of things you have control over you. And regardless of the circumstance you find yourself in. That's the nature of a living faith. And I will tell you, that's hard to do. I've recently had some things happen, of things that really I didn't have a lot of control over in another state. And it's just been bothering me. And it was one of the battles that I had to learn, even in dealing with that, is that, you know, the things I cannot change, I give them to God. If I do the things God has told me to do, I need to look at the things that are on my doorstep that I can have an effect on, that I can do some things with. And I need to learn how to walk by faith. This is a lot harder to do than it is to preach. It's a lot harder to do than just to say what we ought to do. Joseph is a great example for us. Now, having that being our review, and if we've got somebody up there operating the PowerPoint, it looks like my PowerPoint's not advancing. We can get that going. There we go. Here we go. We're back up. This is what we dealt with at the close of the class last week, the discussion questions. And now we have Joseph now in Egypt. Everything's going to be easy from here, right? Not at all. Not only does he deal with having to deal, you know, the past, and he dealt with that, we find that Satan doesn't give up on Joseph. And what he does is he's trying to get Joseph, Satan is, to try to let go of the protection of a living God. And what would you do to destroy a young person? How would Satan attempt to destroy a young person? Well, there's a lot of ways. And Satan knows our weaknesses. But a typical young person would not have as much experience in life, and therefore life's experiences, Satan can sneak up on them in that way. There's the powerful desires, God-given desires that a young person would have. One of the things we read about, of course, the warnings in the Bible about a sexual immorality. In 1 Corinthians 6:18, it says, flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body. But he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? You know, that's a very great struggle for young people, and sometimes older as well. And as you begin to look at the culture of the Egyptians, there would have been nothing in the culture of the Egyptians that would have hindered people from committing immorality. Matter of fact, it was part and parcel of their religion. That's the thing about the idolatry of the ancient world, ritual prostitution and other things, the use of drugs would be part of their religious services. One of the things that made it popular. There was nothing in Egypt that would have restrained one from going down this path. How was Joseph able to be strong? Well, he knew who God was. He would have a knowledge of what God's will was. As the psalmist says in Psalms 119:11, your word I have hid in my heart that I might not sin against you. We can read in the New Testament that when you commit yourself to a living God, knowing his will, God will always provide a way of escape. And you're familiar with 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. And so here Joseph, he's now a slave. He's going to be the best slave possible. He's going to take whatever task is put before him, just like those under the New Testament era, they would do it as if they're doing it for the Lord. And here we begin to read in Genesis 39, 1 through 6, about how Joseph prospered in Egypt. It says, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer over his house and over all that he had put under his authority. As we begin to read this, here is a man, Potiphar. And this man is described as an officer of Pharaoh, a captain of the guard. What would you think about somebody who was an officer of Pharaoh, who's been promoted to a high level in the military? What would be characteristic of this man? Would he be lazy? Would he have an inability to discern people and their abilities? You know, have ability to lead? It's quite interesting. You're seeing here in the Old Testament as well as the New Testament, you New Testament, the centurions, Roman centurions, almost universally, when you have individuals who are spoken well of. There's something about having to fight for your life and having to lead men. And here, Pharaoh was able to identify capable people and promoted them. Now, what did Potiphar see about Joseph? What was Potiphar able to see, according to this verse? He saw that Joseph was a successful man. He was a capable man. But what else, according to this verse, that it said that Potiphar saw? Wow, now, that's starting to get kind of like Daniel, isn't it? Where Daniel, in relationship to Nebuchadnezzar and some of the others, you know, they not only saw somebody who was very capable, they saw what was behind it. Now, not that Potiphar ended up becoming a servant of the living God, but remember, Egypt had all these multiplicity of gods, and he was probably thinking, well, his God really is helping him. That's probably what Potiphar saw. But Potiphar saw a tremendous strength of character. Was Joseph trying to impress Potiphar? No. This is who he was. You see, your ability to survive in difficult circumstances is, do you become a person of faith? Do you become a person aware of the presence of God, aware of his will, and you serve God because you love him, regardless of circumstance? So was Joseph. He goes on, verse 5. So it was, from the time that he made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Wow. Did Potiphar trust Joseph? Of course. And you know, I sometimes think in a marriage relationship, you know, we, in husband and wife, we'll divvy up responsibilities. And it's interesting. There are times I have to talk to Yvette about, you know, where are things, you know. She would have a knowledge of things that I wouldn't know. And same thing her with me. You know, we trust one another because of our marriage. Well, here's this very capable captain trusted Joseph so much, he just didn't worry about anything. And he was right to do that. And so God continued to bless Joseph. What do you think Joseph's heart was like in all of this? How do you maintain a faith in God when things go against you? How do you maintain a faith in God when you don't have other people around you to encourage you having a faith in God? You know, look around us this morning. How many are in this class? There are some parts of the country, if you're going to worship God, you might have to go into your house. And you just worship him there and try to do the will of the Lord because of the isolation of people wanting to serve God. One of the things that I really believe that was a powerful element in Joseph's life, because this is just characteristic of faith, is thanksgiving, is the ability to praise God. Colossians 3:15, the Bible says, "And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which you are called in one body, and be thankful." What could Joseph be thankful for? Being sold into slavery in Egypt, what could he be thankful for? He was still alive. Yeah, and he started seeing day by day continued blessings come, put in charge. His brothers are still alive. I'm sure he loved them. His father was still alive as far as he knew. And he served the living God. And he didn't know what the future would hold, but he knew who held the future. This, to me, brethren, is so critical for us when we get in difficult times and maybe we become isolated from our brethren, we become discouraged. Be thankful. If you ever get to a point in your life where you look in that mirror and you see in your heart and you're not thankful anymore, something very wrong has happened. And you can control that. And we're not talking about make-believe. We're not talking about trying to make up some things that God has done for us. We have been blessed abundantly, regardless of the circumstances we find ourselves in. And we've got to win the battle of the mind, the battle of the heart here. You remember David, when he was getting ready to face the Goliath? You know, he could go back in his life and he could remember how God has blessed him. But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it rose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. What's he doing? He's just looking at his past. And brethren, if we could have the foresight and the wisdom and to understand that we can look back at our life and see how God has blessed us and remember that and win those victories. There's a great strength that comes when adversity comes. You've got a couple of choices to make here. How many of you known people? Let's take two separate individuals. One person had some bad things happen to them, and they went into a bitter cynic. And whenever you visited with them, they will tell you what the brethren did to them and what happened. And they will tell you with great passion the hurt that they remember. And then you find another person, and they may say, you know, they might talk about, you know, some things that have happened in their past, but they're constantly thinking about God and what God has done to bless them and what God is doing in their life. Do you understand what I'm saying here? You have a choice. Please don't become the bitter cynic, because the bitter cynic takes their eyes off God. They take their eyes off God, what God has done for them. Is there anybody on this earth that could rightly say that God has brought more adversity into their life than blessing? Not the child of God. And so again, we see the power in Joseph's life. Now, one of the things that you're going to see that God's going to do is God is going to help Joseph to escape temptation. Why does God allow us to be tempted? Why, after Joseph having done everything that he did, why would he get a pass from bad things? Why wouldn't God just let Joseph from here on out have it easy? There's not an easy answer to this. This may be a philosophical answer, but why is God now letting Joseph having additional tests, like he's about to, being tempted by Potiphar's wife? What's that? You're right. God wants to keep blessing us. And in that, the way we are most blessed is by adversity and test. Test brings out the good in us. Temptation is Satan trying to bring evil in us. But God will allow tests to come to make us go forward. And I'll tell you what, if we're left at ease, you know what we tend to do? We become pretty sorry. Now, I wish it could be we could win the great battle and be up here on the high, and then from there on we'll never turn back and we'll always be strong. But no, we'll continue as we live in this body to have our test. So remember that. Don't well, Lord, I just went through this. Why is this coming into my life? Because God loves you. And he could take that if you'll walk by faith and do good for you. And so, again, it's very difficult in Joseph's case to say no to somebody who has power over you. I probably shouldn't give this illustration because this man is nothing, but he's certainly on the TV a lot. What is when this talk show host, Letterman, what is a few years ago it came out that he had ended up having sex with several of the subordinates, and everybody laughed that off. And that's not a laughing thing. You know, here when you have somebody that's your boss and they're pushing for something like that. But you know, in the media and the society today, you know, people don't care about those things. That's a very tough thing to face when your boss or somebody over you comes at you. Notice what happens. Genesis 39, oops, I got 11 through 13. It looks like I wanted 7 through 9. Let me, typo in the PowerPoint. I like the PowerPoint so we can go a little faster, but sometimes we'll have to use the old-fashioned methods here. Genesis 39. It says, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Ooh, this is a tough situation for Joseph. It's a tough situation from several standpoints, because this, first off, it causes him sin against God. And secondly, it would create a problem with Potiphar. And it's a situation where she's not letting go. She's pursuing this. Again, I'm not going to... These are what-ifs. If you disagree with me, it's not significant whether or not you disagree with me on this. But do you think Potiphar knew something about the character of his wife? Sometimes men are very naive, very busy, not know. I've seen that happen. Sometimes I think they know. We don't know in this case what Potiphar knew or didn't know. But here Joseph's in a tough spot. What if he gave in? Let's reason as Satan might reason to Joseph here. Why should Joseph give in to this? What's that? Yeah, he'll keep a good position. Wouldn't have any more problems. Of course, now, somebody with God's wisdom, what would they say? First off, you sin against God. Secondly, when you enter into a relationship with somebody who has no morals, well, how's that going to work out? What typically do people find out that get involved in affairs, in adulterous relationships? What do they typically find out? They're entering the land of throwaway people. And you are useful as long as you're exciting. You are useful as long as you're useful. And then when you're not useful anymore, boop, into the trash can. So a man of God wouldn't be tempted by that in terms of the long term, because they would understand. You went into that world, buddy. It's the dog-eat-dog world. And so somebody equipped with God's wisdom, we're not going to accept Satan's deliverance. That's why I believe what Hebrews 11 is talking about. People who walk by faith, it says women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance. And the deliverance here is Satan's deliverance. Satan's deliverance is short-term pleasure, but long-term he destroys you. So again, we see the wisdom of Joseph here. And Joseph had to continue to deal with present temptation, because unfortunately, this woman was just relentless toward him. So it was that she spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. I suspect, again, this is my opinion, Potiphar knew about this, because there were other servants in the house. And Potiphar, for whatever reason, we don't know, but that's a speculation, but her character likely was very known. And so Joseph was humble. He was thankful for Potiphar. He was thankful for the honor that Potiphar had bestowed upon him, what God had done for him. And again, we've already talked about the thankfulness that he had. What happened? Well, what you begin to read in Genesis 39, looks like my PowerPoint doesn't have the passage, but in verse 11, and it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside that she called to her the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought us to us a Hebrew to mock us. He came into me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice." You think Joseph thought this day might come? And Joseph had a plan. Have you ever thought, I'm the kind of person, sometimes I think too much. Sometimes I try to prepare too much ahead of time of things that I don't know that can happen. But I'm the kind of person that if I'm about to face a tempting situation or a difficult situation, sometimes I like to play scenarios out in my mind ahead of time. Do you ever do that? Of course we do that. And so Joseph probably had, plan A here if she comes on to him, The plan was to turn around and run. I remember years ago, I think you've heard me give this illustration a few times, where a preacher was telling me about these get-rich-quick schemes that sometimes preachers get involved in, and they lose all their money in it. But he says that the next time somebody comes up to me with a get-rich-quick scheme, the first thing I'm going to do is take my right hand and put it on my wallet, and then I do a 180-degree turn, and then I run. You know, I think that's a funny story. But there are times in areas of temptation, if we can anticipate temptation coming, turning and running's a good strategy. He prepared ahead of time. Now, did it work? From God's perspective, it worked. Flee is a term often referred to in dealing with temptation. And another thing that Joseph was able to have, again, it looks like the passages aren't listed here, Acts 24:15. Paul talked about his life, that the one thing that he tried to preserve, and there were many things that he wanted to present to God and give to God, but if you want to know the heart of faith, the heart of keeping a good faith, the heart of having a strength in adversity, Acts 24, verse 15, Paul says, I have hope in God, which they themselves also accept, that there will be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and of the unjust. This being so, I myself always strive to have a conscience without offense toward God and toward man. So here, Paul wanted to have a good conscience. He wanted to put himself in a position where he can say, I've always done what is right. My goal has always been to love God and do right. There's our strength. There's our strength in dealing with bad situations and adversity, that you've always tried to do right. It gives you great strength and power. Yes. One of the problems he could have faced, again, these are what-ifs. Why didn't he go to Potiphar? It may have been that he couldn't have done, he could have been a pilot in some ways, in weakness, and unable to face something regarding his wife. Secondly, it could well have been that the word of a Hebrew slave is nothing, that he could not do anything in that regard. And who knows, you know, she being a wicked person, what things she might have had on him. You never know that it could have been an impossible situation for him in his mind to face. He was probably not of the character to do it. I don't know. There could be so many possibilities. But that's a thing that Potiphar would not have had anything in his religion of that day to have helped him in these things. Wouldn't have had it. Could have been his own experience. But who knows the ties, the snares that Satan had with him of why he couldn't stand. Let's talk a little bit, if we could now, in some discussion. Let's talk about the temptation of sexual immorality, since that's the stand that Joseph took today. We don't have nearly a problem with that today as they did in Joseph's day, right? I know, it's a sad funny, isn't it? We are living in a time that in some areas of our country we may be experiencing things that are certainly unparalleled in modern history in this regard. We are seeing in our country, in some neighborhoods, illegitimacy rates as high as 92%. And that blows my mind. And you're seeing the breakdown of the home and the family, and you have almost, it's almost like a dog-eat-dog world, like the cattle of the field, where people are just wandering and having relations and having children. And we've got a real, that is a huge problem in our culture, a huge problem. Well, let's talk about TV. We get any help from TV on this subject? No, it's getting worse. I hated to see the commercial. I'd about forgotten about it. But there are just everyday commercials that glorify immorality. I think it's the shit commercial, where certain things happen and something's thrown at a man's face and it turns to water and hits them. And in one case, this girl is just disrobing right in front of him and throws the clothes at him. And it's shocking. And they run that commercial because people buy their razors and like it. What is it? MPV recently is now having things with 15-year-olds that's being described as child pornography now in some of their programs where they're talking about. It's we live in a terrible time in that regard. I remember somebody was talking about back in the late 50s that if somebody was caught with the equivalent of a Playboy magazine, they could have gone to prison. And now it's just everywhere. And so again, I can't change society, but we need to be understanding about the pressure, particularly the pressure put on our children. One of the things, if we're going to win this battle, is we've got to have strong homes. We've got to have parents who love each other and a good relationship, and we need to know our children and really be involved with them. So much of immorality in the teenage years is caused by children that really don't have a very good view of themselves. They're wanting to be adults more quickly. They're wanting to be accepted by others. It's just like drugs in some ways, where there's a peer pressure. There's a high school in Memphis, I forget the size of it. Maybe it had 800 students, and there's 90 pregnancies in it right now. That just blows my mind. I never heard of that when I went to high school. I never heard of that. And when I was in my neighborhood growing up, I never heard of divorce. There might have been one person in our neighborhood that may have had a divorce, and it was whispered, and we never knew anything about it. And I'm not that old. But our society is becoming unraveled when it comes to the home, when it comes to relationships, and when it comes to morality and these things. I'm answering all my questions here, so I'm going to let you answer some. Let's talk about clothing. Is clothing a factor we should consider when we talk about immorality? We have yeses. Well, why? Why is clothing a consideration when we talk about this area? We got any fishermen in the audience? If you want to catch a fish, what you do is you take a transistor and put it on a hook and throw it out there, right? Or a piece of wood. Or a piece of dirt. No. What do you put on your hook? You put on the hook what you want to attract. Certain way to catch crappie, a certain way to catch bass, and you know, I'm not a great fisherman, but I used to know how to go after crappie. That was kind of what I used to go after. But you dress a certain way to get a certain response. Now, do all of our young ladies oftentimes understand the message they're sending in their dress? And there's the challenge. Men and women are different. And there are many times that women may do things innocently. I'm saying they're trying to seek after any kind of certain attention, but they do it there. Where do we learn about fashion? We have Bible classes here to teach about fashion, right? And that's where people decide what to wear. Where do people learn about fashion? TV, magazines, the godly people in Hollywood that are the stars. Right? Isn't that true? And they're really thinking about godliness and righteousness, rightly, as they come out with the various things. No, they're trying to sell clothes. And they're trying to appeal to people in various ways. And so, you see, that's one of the problems we face here within the church many times, is our own young ladies and young men many times don't understand, as they follow the peer pressure of society. They're being sucked into a path in which they're sending messages, whether they know it or not, that they're going to get a bite on that hook. And so, what is the key to standing when others will not? Because you're going to find our young people in today's society are going to be ridiculed. Depends on where you attend, where you live. I'll never forget being in Charlottesville, Virginia, and watching my daughter Emily deal with the people within her realm. And it's not... We tried to be very careful in knowing who Emily was with and knowing what was in the school system and so on, and it was very discouraging to us. It was greatly discouraging to us. My daughter was exposed to more adult type of things than I ever was throughout my teenage life, and than our boys ever was. And I think we handled that well, but we were very discouraged. And one of the reasons why we were considering leaving Charlottesville is that, wow, I don't see anything here that's very encouraging for my daughter and her ability to make friends and relate to others within the community. Now, that may have been extreme, and I don't want to push us as examples here, but I can remember as parents being very concerned about that. How do you stand when others don't? What do you do? Yes, Yvette. And that, yeah, the awareness of God, the presence of God. Ecclesiastes 11:9. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart, in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away all evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. But here in the context, here, remember your God. First bell. Second bell. Okay, well, I'm deaf sometimes. Okay, we'll finish this lesson next week and probably get into lesson 3 as well. Thank you, visitors, for being present. We hope we've all been encouraged by our study. Thank you.